much of our enjoyment of Christmas is based on pieces of literature that are central to the way we perceive what is a traditional Christmas. In some cases, the texts we're going to talk about shortly reflect and distill our seasonal habits and ways, but a couple of them are utterly definitive and played a major part in moulding what are now cast iron seasonal traditions. With me in studio on this Monday evening, Jarlath Killeen, Associate Professor in Trinity College's Dublin's School of English. I suppose you have to start with the elephant in the room, which is Charles Dickens. To many, Charles Dickens invented Christmas, or certainly invented the type of Christmas that we now celebrate in this part of the world. A Christmas Carol being the obvious choice, but there are a few.
Well, when Charles Dickens died, one young boy is reported to have asked, is Father Christmas dead? This is how associated with Christmas Dickens had become by the time of his death. Partly through, obviously, the huge impact of A Christmas Carol itself from 1843, but he subsequently wrote four more Christmas books. And also every time he did his readings, his public readings are enormously popular all around the world. He would often return to certain scenes in A Christmas Carol. So he became embedded really into the consciousness of what Christmas means to an Anglophile culture.
And what was his situation, Charles Dickens' own situation in 1843 when A Christmas Carol was published in, five different, it was serialised over five episodes, I think, yeah?
Oh, no, it wasn't serialised.
Was it not?
No, it was produced as a single volume. So it was quite a short novel. He was in some financial difficulty at the time. He had a failure, really, with Martin Chuzzlewit, which he thought was his best novel, but in fact didn't go down that well with the public. He had a new child on the way, his fifth child, I think it was. So he was desperate for money, and so he sort of spent something like 6 weeks writing in white heat to get this hit going. And he knew he was onto something. He used to spend something like hours and hours a night walking 15 to 20 miles of the streets of London, coming up with this story. And he knew
how many Ebenezer Scrooges would he have seen as he walked the streets of London at that time? Are men who fitted that mold, you know, who are absolutely wrapped up in their business, make money, doesn't really matter, I don't care about the poor. I'm making my money. Capitalism, I guess, is what we're talking about.
It was a certain kind of capitalism. So he had already come to the conclusion that bosses, I suppose we call them, sort of high industrialists, needed to have their hearts changed. He had already visited a Cornish tin mine in the summer of 1843 and been very upset by seeing the state of the children who worked in the tin mines. He had read some government reports about the state of child labour and the kind of hours and the working conditions of children. And that comes through in, for example, the episode of The Christmas Present, when the Ghost of Christmas Present opens his great coat, and underneath there are two shivering children.
Yeah.
And these are clearly the kind of ragged children that Dickens
is encountering.
Direct
reference.
Absolutely, a direct reference. And they're quite terrifying. They look like demons, and they're clearly malnourished.
What about the Cratchit family? I mean, would he have had many, models for that type of family?
No, he wouldn't. Honest? I mean, this is the sort of the creation of what we think of as the contemporary Christmas. If you think about what's happening to Britain in the early 19th century, you're having mass migrations from the countryside into towns and cities. And when you have that kind of mass migrations, one of the questions is, can you keep the old rituals and traditions that you had in the countryside? They don't tend to suit the city. So one of the issues was, how can you celebrate Christmas in an urban environment? And is it possible? So Dickens is trying to, in a sense, provide a way in which the old traditions can be continued in a kind of a refurbished way or a refracted way.
So it's a rural family brought into a city setting.
In a sense,
well,
yes.
let's listen to how the Cratchit family then celebrate Christmas. It's Simon Callow is the voice that we will hear reading from Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol.
Bob said he didn't believe there had ever been such a goose cooked. Its tenderness, its flavour, its size and its cheapness were themes of universal admiration. And indeed, as Mrs. Cratchit observed with great delight, surveying one tiny atom of a bone left on the dish, they had an ideal at last. In half a minute, Mrs. Cratchit entered with the Christmas pudding, blazing in half a quart of ignited brandy and bedecked with a sprig of Christmas holly. Bob Cratchit said he regarded it as Mrs. Cratchit's greatest achievement since their marriage. Merry Christmas. God bless us all. And the family re-echoed that. And God bless us. Everyone, said Tiny Tim, the last of all.
Tiny Tim can make you cry at any time of the day or night, can't he? Just have to hear his name and you're off. Well, I am anyway.
It's a difficult one to pull off, Tiny Tim, certainly in adaptations. I mean, what's the line between mawkishness and actually touching your heart? And that's a difficult one.
Yeah, well, look, an adaptation of A Christmas Carol currently running at the Gate on in Dublin. I was out there on Saturday. I cried. So there you go. Touched my heart.
I just want to emphasise that is a domestic Christmas, and that is very different than the kind of Christmases that would have been experienced in, say, the 17th and 18th centuries, which is a much more community centred Christmas, not centred around children.
And not centred around family having dinner by themselves.
Not centred around a domestic nuclear family in their own home. It was, you left your house.
Of course, the end of Christmas Carol, the Cratchits get a big turkey.
They do.
Is that Dickens' invention?
Well, he's drawing on the fact, you know, that people are moving towards the turkey, away from the goose, which the Cratchits eat in their own meal. So he's looking at birds that are much more easily mass produced and for city consumption.
What was the tradition of the Yule log being burnt in a rural field? That was a rural tradition.
Yeah, so you bring a gigantic log in at the start of the 12 days of Christmas, which is really 13 days. But you start burning, and hopefully it would burn all the way through. And the tradition was you would light next year's Yule log with the remnants of last year's.
Ah.
So it had to be gigantic. So it's a kind of, again, it's usually said that the idea of the old Merry Christmas English Christmas.
Yeah, so that was the big, that was the whole community. It wasn't the house, it wasn't the Cratchit family by themselves.
It was the entire community. Now that, again, it was a sort of a utopian and nostalgic version of that old Merry Christmas that probably wasn't completely accurate, but it was certainly not a domestic Christmas.
Right. Clement Clark Moore then, 'twas the night before Christmas. I mean, you only have to say that. And then the test is, do you know the name of all the reindeer? But we'll get there shortly. Where does that come in relation to Dickens? We're a bit further on in time,
I guess. No, we're earlier here. Yeah, so
Tell me.
It's 1823, New York. First published anonymously in the Troy Sentinel. But immediately becomes extraordinarily popular and goes nationwide a couple of years after that.
And what was he doing there in terms of creating, if you like, the American way of Christmas?
Yes.
And Christmas in particular here.
So what he's tapping into is there's a couple of traditions. There's been personifications of Christmas since at least the 17th century. The idea of Father Christmas, the understanding that Father Christmas walks around during this period of festivities. In late 18th, early 19th century New York, there was an attempt to sort of revive an idea of an old Dutch identity of New York State. And part of that Dutch identity was the position of St. Nicholas in Old Holland. And St. Nicholas' feast is on the 16th of December. So he's placed already in December
period. In the right time of year.
And certain versions of ways of speaking about St. Nicholas see him as a gift giver, a gift bringer, a kind of this personification of generosity. And in Switzerland, in the Netherlands, certain pronunciations of St. Nicholas sound quite like Santa Claus.
Right.
So this is probably where the idea...
That version of the name came from.
And reviving this idea of bringing this old Christmas back to a cosmopolitan, rapidly expanding, much more democratic New York and trying to rein in the commercialism of the period. And saying, this is Christmas. This is what Christmas represents. It's this St. Nicholas bringing the gifts.
Let's have a listen to a very different type of Christmas in America again. And this is the Grinch, who stole Christmas. Let's have a listen to a little bit from the book, first of all, then we can talk about where it sits afterwards.
Every Who down in Whoville liked Christmas a lot. But the Grinch, who lived just north of Whoville, did not. The Grinch hated Christmas, the whole Christmas season. Please don't ask why. No one quite knows the reason. It could be his head wasn't screwed on just right. It could be perhaps his shoes were too tight. But I think that the most likely reason of all may have been that his heart was two sizes too small. But whatever the reason, his heart or his shoes, he stood there on Christmas Eve, hating the Whos, staring down from his cave with a sour, grinchy frown at the warm lighted windows below in the town. For he knew every Who down in Whoville beneath was busy now, hanging a mistletoe wreath. And they're hanging their stockings, he snarled with a sneer. Tomorrow is Christmas, it's practically here. Then he growled with his Grinch fingers nervously drumming, I must find some way to stop Christmas from coming.
Oh, the Grinch Who Stole Christmas, the Dr. Seuss book there. Keith Morrison, American news presenter, was who we heard reading that particular version of The Grinch Who Stole Christmas. Jarlath Killeen is talking to me about the literary versions of Christmas. When does that come, and how does it tell us something about the society of that day, Americans, when Dr. Seuss was writing?
Well, so this is 1957. So one thing it tells us is the huge influence of Dickens. He is a Scrooge figure.
Yeah.
He's an anti-Christmas figure.
The Grinch is.
Yeah, so he hates Christmas.
Scrooge reincarnated.
That's right. But secondly, he also tells us something about the dark side of the Santa Claus, our understanding of Santa Claus. Santa Claus is a housebreaker. He does enter the house. Now, he enters the house to leave gifts. Mm. But there's actually been a long tradition, particularly in America in the 19th century, of people arriving at your house, breaking into it and demanding food, drink, alcohol and money at Christmas, particularly the poor. So there was an awful lot of, if you even think of a visit from St. Nicholas, I had nothing to dread when he says in the narrator,
night before Christmas.
Because he would have usually had something to dread if you hear somebody breaking into your house at this time of the night. Now, so what the Grinch does, he goes back to that old tradition of breaking into the house, but this time he's stealing Christmas. He's taking Christmas away, and he's taking Christmas as it's personified in things like the gifts.
Maybe what's interesting here, because we think of him as the Scrooge figure, et cetera, et cetera, but to what extent is Dr. Seuss, in fact, making a very strong point about how commercialised Christmas had become by the time we got to the late 50s?
But that's another interesting point. Christmas has always been commercialised. People have always, right back to the 16th century, you can find people saying, it's starting too early, people are buying too much, and people are drinking and getting rowdy too much.
And they're burning their Yule log too early in the field, I presume.
And for an anti-commercial book like The Grinch, it's very, very commercially successful. And you know
that
the Grinch brings all the stuff back. Now, he does say there is something more about Christmas other than simply the gifts, but he brings this stuff back. So even if Christmas is something more than presents, the presents are necessary. So they personify the gift, the gift giving, this kind of season of generosity, which involves spending. It's just like the first thing Scrooge does after he becomes redeemed is buys a turkey, a huge turkey. So it's the excess involved. You must spend, you must circulate money.
So you're actually being unwittingly, you're being pushed in towards the spending, whether you want to or not. Yeah. And of course, as you say, Doctor, the book.
And these are great books to buy at Christmas. It's basically you must
there
buy
you
them.
I know. The Snowman then, 1978, Raymond Briggs. The Thatcherite setting of our time when this happened is quite interesting.
Yeah, so the original book is published actually in the 70s, but the adaptation that we all now
that
associate
we all know
is 1982.
Right, so.
But even if you think of Britain in the 70s, it's a very, very dreary place. You know, constant strikes, energy, you know, the electricity goes, there's all these power strikes. Inflation is like 30 to 35% sometimes. People are miserable. And you find that in times of intense economic distress, Christmas becomes much more crucial. If you think even the great pop hits that we now sort of remember, like Merry Christmas Everyone, that comes from the 1970s, you know, Slade.
Yeah.
So the excess is really important. But what you get with the Snowman is this absolutely sort of bleak landscape, a whiteness, a purity, as if, you know, coming out of this dreary, dirty Britain, Raymond Briggs is trying to bring a kind of a complete whitewashing of the whole thing. Just let's clean ourselves up.
And would you say Briggs is pro or anti Christmas?
Well, Briggs himself hates Christmas. He's said this number. He doesn't like children either. He doesn't think of the Snowman as a Christmas book.
And yet he wrote that story.
And he also,
it's not a Christmas book for him.
It's not a Christmas book for him, although he became famous initially for writing a book called Father Christmas, in which Father Christmas is quite a grumpy you know, miserable old soul who doesn't like delivering bread that much, but he has to do it. So he doesn't think of the snowman as a Christmas story at all. And he objected to the adaptation because they'd inserted Father Christmas into the adaptation.
Okay. Let's finish up with something a little bit close to home for me. And this is quite definitely an evocation of rural Irish Christmas. Yes. We're talking about Patrick Kavanagh.
That's right. It's a kind of mythologization of a very nostalgic version of an Irish Christmas. So this written, Patrick Kavanagh is a Christmas child, written in the 1940s, going through war, the Hungry 40s, and he's remembering childhood in the 1910s, or possibly even earlier. So he says he's six Christmases of age. I think he's born in something like that.
Yeah, I think he was 19, six in 1910, where it was.
So he is, and he's quite self-consciously nostalgifying, I suppose, and providing kind of rose-tinted version of it, in which he's associating various characters of his past with the characters in the nativity story. So it's in a sense like Bethlehem comes to Mucker, County Monaghan.
Yeah.
But it's the tension that how do we remember our own Christmases, even if they were hungry, even if they were difficult, because it would have been quite difficult times in Mucker in the 1910s.
Yeah.
How he manages to make them sound wonderful and sparkling.
Yeah, and I suppose people always quote Stony Grace out of Monaghan as him knocking Monaghan. Well, definitely, if you want to get his gem of joy about Monaghan, then you go to this particular poem. And we'll finish up with the full reading of the Patrick Kavanagh poem. Neil O'Hanagan is the reader here.
A Christmas Childhood by Patrick Kavanagh. One side of the potato pits was white with frost. How wonderful that was. How wonderful. And when we put our ears to the paling post, the music that came out was magical. The light between the ricks of hay and straw was a hole in heaven's gable. An apple tree with its December glinting fruit we saw. Oh, you, Eve, were the world that tempted me to eat the knowledge that grew in clay, and death the germ within it. Now and then I can remember something of the gay garden that was childhood's. Again, the tracks of cattle to a drinking place, a green stone lying sideways in a ditch, or any common sight, the transfigured face of a beauty that the world did not touch. My father played the melodeon outside at our gate. There were stars in the morning east and they danced to his music. Across the wild bogs a melodeon called to Lennons and Callans. As I pulled on my trousers in a hurry, I knew some strange thing had happened. Outside in the cowhouse, my mother made the music of milking. The light of her stable lamp was a star, and the frost of Bethlehem made it twinkle. A water hen screeched in the bog. Mass-going feet crunched the wafer ice on the potholes. Somebody wistfully twisted the bellows wheel. My child poet picked out the letters on the grey stone. In silver, the wonder of a Christmas townland. The winking glitter of a frosty dawn. Cassiopeia was over Cassidy's hanging hill. I looked, and three whin bushes rolled across the horizon, the three wise kings. An old man passing said, "Can't he make it talk, the melodeon?" I hid in the doorway and tightened the belt of my box-plated coat. I nicked six nicks in the doorpost with my penknife's big blade. There was a little one for cutting tobacco, and I was six Christmases of age. My father played the melodeon, my mother milked the cows, and I had a prayer like a white rose pinned on the Virgin Mary's blouse.
And there we heard the voice of Niall O'Hanagan there reading Patrick Kavanagh's A Christmas Childhood, and before that it was Jareth Killeen who was speaking to us about literature and Christmas. By the way, the Niall O'Hanagan reading was part of the Poetry Now project.